Fisher Body Historical Project interview, August 11th, 2005, Thursday, in the conference room in the Skills Center. Interviewer, Marilyn Coulter. Interviewee, Rudy Reyes. Rudy, could you please spell your name for me, please?
It's R-U-D-Y-R-E-Y-E-S.
All right. And it's Rudolfo, but do they call you Rudolfo or Rudy in the plant?
They usually call me Rudy in the plant.
And Rudy, can you give your address?
Yes, I live at 310 Beaver Street, Lansing, Michigan, 48906.
Mm-hmm. And your seniority date, please?
4-18-69.
Are you a resident of Lansing? Were you a resident of Lansing?
Yes, I've always been a resident of Lansing.
So, how old were you when you hired in to the Fisher
Body? I was 18. The next day, I turned 19.
And the next day, you turned 19. Did you have any prior jobs prior to coming into Fisher Body?
I had plenty of jobs. I was a working kid.
You were working.
I worked in the fields like a lot of Latinos. Worked in the fields, and I knew I didn't want to do that for a living. So I worked at restaurants. I went from the fields to the restaurants, and I did a lot of errands for people in the neighborhood. I found out I could make money running errands, shoveling snow, cutting grass. So I did all kinds of stuff, wash cars.
So you've always been a working person. Now, you grew up in Lansing. What high school did you go to?
Eastern High School.
Eastern High School. That's quite a ways away from the Fisher Body plant. Was there anything... Any kind of connections did you have with the plant as you were growing up?
My dad worked here.
Your dad worked here?
Yes.
Now, did you ever visit the plant, or what did you think
about
the plant?
No, I never visited the plant. I just knew he worked there. I knew they made good money there, but I never wanted to work here.
But you never wanted to work here? Okay. I see now, it's your work experiences. You said that. Now, were there any other plants that you worked in before you worked here?
I worked at, it's funny, is that I worked for Mellon Forging. I worked for Oldsmobile once. I hired in Fisher Body twice. So the third time around, I stayed.
Now, you said you hired in the Fisher Body twice. What was it like? If you hired in twice and on three different occasions you came here, what was each time like? What was it like the first time you came in here? What did you think?
The first time I went was to Oldsmobile. And it was hurry up, learn this job, you're on your own. I ended up cutting myself on the motor blade. Because we had to tighten them down with three bolts. So you put a gun on there, and if you didn't get it right, it spun like a regular engine. And the lady I worked with got really mad because she said, there's no way I should have been on that job by myself so fast.
So how long did you work at Oldsmobile?
I'd say about 60 days.
60 days. Yeah. And then in your second time?
I hired a Fisher Body, and I worked one day.
You worked one day. Now,
yes.
What was the experience like to cause you to work only one day?
Well, I was
day?
Working really hard, and the guy next to me says, and I know who he is to this very day, he said, you think this job is hard now? Wait till Christmas. And I didn't come back the next day.
You didn't come back the next day?
No.
And now, do you remember how old you were?
I'm all 18 in that.
You're all 18. So on your third time, you came back. So?
I was married. My wife was pregnant. I worked at Universal Steel, and my wife was pregnant before I hired in, so they weren't going to pay for it. So the night before, I had had to wait for the bus, because I rode the bus, I didn't have a car, and it rained. So I missed the bus. So I had to walk home. So by the time I got home, I was sopping wet. My wife says, you have a job interview tomorrow. It's Friday. Friday. I said, okay. So I went to the job interview. Mr. Brooks interviewed me. And he says, after we did the interview, I was healthy and everything else. He says, you want to start tonight or you want to start Monday? I said, no, I'll start tonight. He said, come in tonight. And that was Friday. That was the next day, Saturday was my birthday. He said, okay. So I started that night. And I went to my old boss and I said, I won't be working here anymore. He goes, don't ever come back here for a reference or a job or anything else. So my foreman, where I worked, said, don't come back no more. And I'd been there for like 6 months.
So that was at the Universal Steel plant.
Yeah. So I didn't plan, but I asked Mr. Brooks after the interview, I said, my wife has a baby 6 months from now. Will you pay for it? And he said, she can have it tomorrow, we'll pay for it. And that's when I signed the paper. I'm here.
So then you're saying benefits are one of the
benefits, yes.
Uh-huh. So, and this is back in 1969.
Right.
And so what was it like coming in here for good?
For I didn't know it was coming for good. Because I wanted to be an engineer. But then I had a wife, and then I got a baby, and then I learned how to do the job, and it was good income, and I went to school part-time and everything else, and then one day I just didn't go back to school. I just stayed here and learned as much as I could, and I'm still going to school to this very day because I take classes as I need them. So it's been good.
So when you were a new hire on the night shift, what was there an initiation? What was it like? Can you remember what that first day was like when you were here? And what area did you hire in?
I hired in the cushion room.
In the cushion room?
Yes.
What was done in the cushion room?
We put the seats together, we put the covers, we put all the springs, we hog-ringed them, we stapled them with big staples, not little staples. We stretched them. Some people hog-ringed their fingers.
Now, can you describe a hog ring?
A hog ring is a gun that comes together like a hook. It's a hook, and it's got points on both ends. And you learn to go really fast, and I'll do the noise for it. It goes, and the faster you are, the faster you get done. So we had people that could really run that baby. But every so often, you'd hear a howl that somebody got themselves, and everybody else would howl with them because it hurt.
It hurt, okay. How long did you, was there an initiation?
No. Well, what happens is when I'm in the cushion room, my dad worked in the cushion room. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the ladies there would ask me, are you Poncho's boy? And I'd say, yes, we're going to take good care of you. And they did. They taught me a lot of stuff to do, not to do. And sometimes it kept me in line, too.
Mm-hmm. So they kind of held your hand and helped you learn the ropes?
Mm-hmm.
So how long did you work in the cushion room?
About a year and a half.
A year and a half.
They shipped everybody out. It was in a cushion room that had less than 2 years up to trim or through the plant, and I ended up in trim.
And trim is what?
It was 3X at that time.
And what did you do in trim?
I put in inner parts of the car, like screws and bolts and convertibles, you know, the little holes go around to hold your convertible top once you put it down.
Okay. So trimming is the...
A lot of handguns, a lot of screw guns.
A lot of screw guns, a lot of handguns. So trim is just considered like the interior fineries of the car. So did you do work in just the metal part of trim, or did you work in the fabric part of trim?
No. I didn't work till... I didn't work... I don't think I ever worked on the outside of it. I mean, the cover-up part. I call it where all the part you cover up everything that everybody else does. No.
So you did all the interior trim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I was good with my hands.
You were good with your hands. So, and you've worked in trim? Did you work in trim for your whole entire...
Almost all, except during the 74 when they laid off everybody during the gas embargo, when they laid me off from March till August, and then they called me back and said, we're going to send you to the body shop. So I went to the body shop for 6 months. Then one day they asked me, do you want to go back to trim or do you want to stay here? By the time they finished their question, I was gone. I went back to trim.
So, what was it like going from the cushion room to trim to body shop to back to trim?
It was hot because you had to wear coveralls, you had a shield for your glasses, and sometimes you had to wear a hat. Depends on what you were doing because they had a lot of sparks flying around.
Okay, so was it a cloth hat, a metal hat?
Cloth hat. I got to use a cloth hat.
Okay, and now. So the primary reason you don't work in body shop was the heat.
The heat and the noise.
And the noise.
Yep.
So would you say that the people culture in body shop, paint, and cushion was similar, or how did they differ?
I think they all had their own culture.
How so, would you say?
Because the body shop people were all, you had your own area, you had to yell, to talk, so you made kind of like not noises but gestures to get somebody's attention, and then once you got their attention you did what you could to entertain each other, and I did pretty good down there.
So what types of things did you do to entertain?
One time the car went by and we made it a floating trash can, so I told everybody they had to throw all their trash in the car, so everybody threw all their trash in the car.
Okay. And so then how was trim?
Dream was, you could talk to people. People, there was people side by side to each other, so you had to get along with people because you're working next to the person. I mean, there were like three or four people, and you got your job done. Somebody else got their job done, but we were all sequential. Everybody was, it was body to body in those days.
So how has, so what did you do for fun there to get through your night?
Oh, I did a lot of things. I was, one time I went in a phone booth, and they put a cloth around my neck and put an S and M on my shirt. And everybody, when we took a break, everybody had to take a break at the same time. So as they came to the break area and they waited till everybody sat down, I opened a phone booth and I hollered, Supermax. And they thought that was funny. And I had that name for a long time. Some people still remember.
So, Supermax is wonderful. So now I see, and I know that you, while you were here, you said you went to school, but I know that while you were here, you got involved with your union.
Yes.
So, can you tell me something about your union experiences?
I have a lot of good union experiences. The union has, put it bluntly, spent a lot of money on me. But in reverse, I hope I've given at least that much in back because they educated me. They sent me places. They showed me things that I'd never had the opportunity to do, to sit on boards. I've had the opportunity to represent labor. I've been in the newspaper many times, but a lot of people forget when they put my name in the newspaper, it says Local 6, Rudy Reyes, Local 602 Community Service Chairperson, because that's who I represent when I sit on the board. I usually represent labor. 99% of the time, I'm labor. And if I'm not, I'm associated with labor.
So, do you remember what year you first got involved with the union?
It was like around the 80s. I always did stuff for the union, but it was around the 80s when I started. I was on the community service committee. I was asked to be on a community service committee by Kenny Schultz.
Is that the only committee you've ever been on?
Yes. I did it. One day he asked me if I'd like to be a chair because he's thinking about retiring. And then he had a heart attack and decided to retire. And there was five people who ran for the job, and everybody told me they were going to get the job, all the union guys that ran for it. And the only part they forgot to tell me is, the bad part they told me is they were going to win it. And by them telling me they were going to win it made me more determined that I was going to win it. And I won it.
What does a community service chair do?
Community service chair represents the union in the community, like on United Way boards, old newsboys, blood drives, food drives. Sometimes our people have financial problems or medical problems that nobody else seems to solve. And by sitting on those boards, you get to know those people from Red Cross or United Way. And then community service has a class up to Black Lake once a year where you learn all the ins and outs or all the agencies that help people. So the more you mix with people, the more you mingle with people, the more people you have, more resources you have to help people. So I'm a pretty good mingler. And I'm pretty, okay.
We're going to pause for 1 second.
Okay.
Rudy, as you're doing community service, what I want to ask you is, how do you feel that your community service committee affected and it helped to change the culture within the plant?
It helped to change because we got people to believe in us, and all we had was our credibility. And when all you have is your credibility, people either believe in you and don't. I was fortunate that the union people at that time were able to go tell management that this is a good job. Now, hopefully, I was doing a good job, that they let me out of the plant full-time for about 12 years. I did community service full-time. So what we were able to do is we were able to do what we did better, work on it better. We were able to take the people who run the committee and get them training, like for United Way. We do computer classes, and we have a couple people that do computer classes because we send them to computer classes. Our president, was on a community service committee, not bragging, but Derek Quinney, Roberta Cannon, a lot of people, yourself, did United Way. We had a lot of people that came through, did United Way, and went different ways from there. And the best thing we could do is show them their options and everything else, or I guess let them be on their own and be their own boss.
And with being with United Way and dealing with the regular everyday worker on the line, how do you feel your committee affected the average worker on the line? Not the ones that were necessarily involved in the union activities, but just those everyday workers on the lines who might have helped with your coat drives or with your or through donations or through their blood drives.
I think the things, the letters we put out that we tried to appeal to them on a one-to-one basis, some of the people that we had write stories weren't just a committee, we had people write stories. Plus, hopefully our people felt that they were helping. So that when we said we needed coats, we put a story out that, you know, a lot of kids don't wear coats when you see them wearing coats. When they don't have a coat on, it's not because they're warm. A lot of times, they don't have a coat. Those kind of stories that we put out. And hopefully, we were able to get back to people when they needed help and then got them help. We had a situation where one of our EAP reps called, and they placed people in a rehab place. And he said, I have a guy that I can't place. Can you call? So I called one of the places I called, and they were able to get him in. They got him in, and it's just from the context that we had. But our EAP rep couldn't get him in because it comes back to we make too much money.
So do you feel that through United Way it helped to connect the workers, the UAWGM workers, to the community?
I think with all the agencies that we set on, all the code drives, the food drives, and people see you out there and everything else, and they realize that it's not a job to get out of the plant. It's a job that you do, that you like, and your heart's into it.
All right. So would you say that during your time here, and you did community service, and then you say you hired in 1969, and this is 2005, how do you feel that the involvement of employees in certain activities like that evolved?
I think a lot of our employees do volunteer work, but they don't tell people. It's like a something you do, but you don't want acknowledgement for. So I think a lot of our employees do volunteer work. If we were to take all the people in our plant, we'd be shocked of how much money, time, that our people give back to the community.
But in talking about the plant and the working conditions, you said you worked in a bunch of different places. What made you, I know it was the benefits was one reason you stayed, but what would you say was the best thing about working here outside of the benefits?
It's always been a good working environment. I was impressed by when I first came in, some of the things that happened. Like getting a pair of gloves to work with. All you had to do was ask for a pair of gloves. Some place I worked, you want a pair of gloves, you had to fight tooth and nail to get a pair of gloves, and the first time I asked for a pair of gloves, I got a pair of gloves. And sometimes when you're handling things, you know you need a pair of gloves. Or you need this, or you need that. And I was able to get that, to get drill bits, you know, driver bits. You asked for that stuff and you got it. Sometimes, you know, certain supervisors, or you had to pull a tooth or two, but you got it. Plus, and then seniority. I'm a firm believer in seniority because I think seniority counts. And I think it's about the fairest way that I know to give somebody a job or apply for a job, because I've seen the boss's buddy, the union buddy, the union guys, buddies, get jobs. Somebody's always taking care of somebody or their buddies. And seniority seems to be the equalizer. That if you had seniority and you kept your little receipt, you could get a job. A lot of people used to ask me, well, how come you get all these easy jobs? And I would tell them, I applied for them, just like you can. And I'd apply for the job. A couple times I was told I couldn't have the job because I didn't have a receipt. So I'd say, okay, Then I'd go home and I'd get my little receipt and I'd show them the receipt. And this look on their faces like, like a mad look. But I got that job because I saved my little receipt that says I applied for that job.
Ah, okay. So you had to have, you kept your application. So application, you had to, you had to apply for the job that you wanted to change them. So being there, what would you say was your happiest moment or your most fondest memory working in the plant?
Working in the plant? Helping people. Yes, be team leader, but I think I've always been a team leader. Now they have jobs called team leaders. It's when somebody needs something and they can't get it. And they have, everybody has their way of trying to get something. And I guess sometimes I have a knack for getting things, and sometimes it's trying to make somebody's job easier.
So what was the kind of knack that you needed to help make somebody's job easier?
Talking to people. Just talking to people, giving logic, and putting it in the terms that the person needed the logic. I could put it in my logic, but it's my logic that I want to hear. So if I could put it in a supervisor's logic, where it's going to save them money, save them time, save them production, they would listen. It would get done. But I had to put it in their logic.
So you had to have the power of communication in order to do that job. So, do you feel that, given the fact that you are, and you are of Hispanic descent, correct?
Yes.
All right. And do you feel that that played a part in your work at all?
I say yes and no, and some people may giggle when I say this, but I'm a hard worker. I learn quick. I learn easy. So you can stick me on a job in half an hour, I would learn it. And then I would manipulate the job to eliminate steps and everything else to make it easy for me.
So, I said you're a Hispanic member. Are you mixed with anything else?
Nope, genuine Mexican parts.
Okay, just genuine Mexican parts.
Yeah.
All right. So during your time, I know, did you ever have to go through any major strikes?
Yes, I went to one in 69.
In 69, how long were
you? Yes, I think we were out for almost 90 days.
And what were you striking for?
Tell you the truth, I can't remember what it was for. Because I was just came in. Yeah. And it's just before Walter Ruther passed away, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Did you take part in the strike?
Yes, I was in front of the building. And my job was to sit up front, make sure nobody came in that door. And they came by every so often. You had to sign up. You had a certain day you showed up for 4 hours. And then you stayed for those 4 hours. Somebody came by, brought coffee and donuts. And then afterwards they would stamp or mark your card that you showed up. And then a certain day you'd go get your check.
So did you participate in any others?
We had a one-day one. I think it was one-day or two-day one. But other than that, those are the only two.
In working, and I know you had your strikes, your layoff, and your funding, but are there any things that they used to have in the plant that you miss that you don't have anymore?
I think the part is all the people, when there was a lot of people in the plant, there was a lot of camaraderie. Now everybody's spread out everywhere else in your own, you're in your own little world almost everywhere you're at, and unless you have a couple places where there's a lot of people. And one time we had 6,200 employees. Just before we closed down, we were like 2,800 employees. That's a big drop of a lot of people.
So that's a big drop. Now, when you talk about the number of people here, I guess I'm asking, when you were here in 1969, were there a lot of females working here?
No, there wasn't a lot.
How was?
And if they were, they were on nights because they didn't have seniority to stay on days.
So what was it like for the transition when a lot of women started coming into the plant?
We had a lot of droolers.
Droolers.
Because all of a sudden, all these young ladies are coming in and they want jobs and everything else. And it was like, oh my goodness.
Was it hard for you being a man working in the facility, having women come in the plant?
No.
It was an easy transition for you?
Sure. It was, better scenery. Because you get tired of seeing them ugly guys all the time. So it was better scenery. And then what happens is as they came in and they proved themselves that they could learn the jobs, they learned a lot of respect from almost everybody, but there's a few that,
You came from Lansing. How was it working with people from outlying communities coming into Lansing to work?
It was different. You had a lot of people from a lot of small towns. We had a lot of farmers from all small towns. And you learned about who they were, and they also learned about us, us people who lived in town and everything else. And I always thought that was good that General Motors did that, because they gave a fair chance to everybody, not just the people who lived in Lansing. People from all areas of the state had to come in and work.
How did it affect Rudy Reyes to work with people from out? How did it help you?
Well, my dad came from a farming community. But I was, you know, I knew he lived in a farming community, but never knew about it. And then some of the people he grew up with already worked in the plant. So they'd recognize me and ask me, are you Elias's boy? And I said, yes. Then they say, well, your dad grew up with me. So they would tell me bits and pieces of his story that he had never told me.
Oh.
So then the other people, when they came in, you found out there was two kinds of schedules. Those of us who go home and go to sleep after you get out of work, and those who go to work, say we're working nights, who go to work all day long and then come to General Motors, Fisher Body, and work.
So, do you feel that the people who worked in the fields, that affected the way Fisher Body was able to do their job here? What made it special?
You learned a lot about their way of life, not their way of life, but what they did all day. Mm-hmm. And then you had a respect for what they did. Was it hogs? Was it farming? Was it goats or whatever it was, sheep? You learned what they did. You know, if you ask questions, they would tell you. If you didn't ask any questions, you didn't care what was going on the next person to you, you didn't learn nothing. Well, I had a lot of questions.
So who would you say was probably your most interesting person that you met there?
Wilbur Weller.
Wilbur Weller?
Yes. He was a pig farmer.
And what made him interesting?
Because he was like me. We know how to get things. We both know how to get things, and it was management and the union, and then there was us too. Okay, and sometimes we had to take them both on, because sometimes the union didn't want to give us what we wanted, and sometimes management didn't know. And when he quit, I still, this very day, I tell his brothers, tell him, I need somebody to help me fight. Because he quit to go into farming, pig farming, full time. So he quit. And that was a big day, because he had like 17 years seniority.
Quit after 17 years.
Yes, it was a hard one, and it was like, you know, that's a question people ask when people quit here to go on to another full-time job or something they like doing, is how can you give up this job for another job? It's like leaving the security, like leaving the nest for the first time. I mean, you get paid every single week. You're either, if you're laid off, you get paid. You get subpaid. You know, why would you ever give up this job? Can't you do it on the side, or can't you do this but still do this job? And he left.
Now, you just said you get laid off and you get subpay. Can you tell me what subpay is, please?
Okay. When you get laid off, you get unemployment. And they give you so much money, maybe $390-some or $300-some. And then subpay makes up the difference of up to 85%. I say 85% pay. So it makes up the difference, because it's not our fault we're laid off. So somewhere in agreement with the UAW management, they've come to that agreement saying it's not our employees. We're willing and able to work. It's something you don't have work available for us to do.
So this is a negotiated benefit?
Negotiated, yes.
So it's another union benefit?
Yes.
Now, do you have any other jobs outside of working here in play?
No, because I was taught a long time ago that if you should put your budget where you work, where you 40 hours pay. Anything above that, you just stick in the bank.
Okay.
Because if you can't to live on 40 hours pay, then you can't afford what you have. So I've always made my budget 40 hours, and that's it. Matter of fact, I had my wife ask me one time to go get another job, and I told her no, for the same logical reason. If I can't live on 40 hours pay, then I can't afford what I have.
Okay. So would you say that most people just work at Fisher Body, or has, by virtue of what you've done, has never allowed you to expand out in other avenues for you privately?
No, I've gone to school, and now that I'm getting ready to retire, I've taken up a printing business. Somebody called me one day and said, did I want to start a printing business? And they told them, give me a price. It was a good price. I said, yes. But then I went to a trade show and found out I could buy brand new equipment for half price. I couldn't get the contacts that the printing people had. So I hired the woman that had the most contract, the most contacts. And here I am. I have a union print shop. Mm-hmm. And some people kid me when I first tell them I have a print shop. I had a management person say, oh, yeah. And is it union? And I said, yes, it is. And he was shocked. It was a union print shop. But I'm a union person. What else? But it has to be a union print shop.
So you're going to continue to be here?
Yes. The union has paid me well. The union has taken care of me. And hopefully I can give somebody else that same benefit.
Okay. So, did I hit this? I hit the wrong thing? It stopped.